Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
The World Atlas of Cheese, probably the episode 14 as I'm struggling through all of this. This is a 1976 classic by Nancy Erkoff Stork. There's so many different aspects to it. It's limited, but all knowledge is limited and enriched. So enriched is a common idea of cheese and the fact that as it's sort of like a base agricultural technology which is held together when the civilizations crash and the fertility or the nature of the soil changes, you move to different cheese making techniques, or if your civilization crashes, it can be rebuilt by cheese as it goes through. And there's a lot of lost interest in cheese, ideas of the Romans having cheese rooms, molding things in terms of cheese, different cheese technologies, mozzarella, ricotta cheese, cheese made from casein, albumin, what's real cheese, and different ways that people are structured using cheese. Cheese is sort of a basic protein concept throughout foods, being a vegetarian or non-meat-eating, non-life-destroying stuff. There's all the chemistry of it all coming through. And then sort of the way that the information is structured. At the time it was written in 1976, I'm not sure they knew as much about the amino acids and the chemistry of cheese, or that we're going to go through so much processes separating and standardizing our milk consumption. We also go through the different countries, which is sort of like a window back into 1976, views about East and West Germany, Czechoslovakia, and now we're going to go to Hungary, which is a Soviet bloc country, and we'll start to talk about it as we go through this. So we've labored through many cheese fantastic countries. I'm sure it can't go this much as we go through other continents. So we go with Hungary. With the exception of the Alps and the Spurs, the Carpathians, the Hungarian Republic is the most vast plains, such as the Alfold. There are fertile pastures in the wet regions and dry areas covered by treeless pulzen, where the nomads used to herd their cattle. In the early days, the Magyars, and even later in the reign of Stephen, cattle were considered of value only as draft animals or for slaughtering. Milk was not the Hungarians' taste. It was very little was made into cheese. Yet, by the 13th century, some advance had been made towards the dairy industry. Hungarian sheep, similar to cheese, was being sold in the little town of Kazmark, cheese market, founded by German colonists. Okay, there's also a Kazmark in the other country. Although the cheeses from cow's milk, notably Emmental and Gruyere, were made by Swiss immigrants in modern times, Hungarian cheese production only gained recognition between the two world wars. Now, this is really interesting because you feel like Swiss... Why is Switzerland such a great place? Why are people immigrating from? Production continued after 45. The farmers' standard of living considerably improved when the Hungarian Milk Industry Trust began to buy milk from a collective of government farms to regulate the preparation. The Zombathi there is now a government farm with no less than 1,200 Frisian cows. All Hungarian cheese are made from pasteurized milk, and small farms have stopped production. In the meantime, the government is working towards extending cattle breeding areas, partly by irrigating Pulza region cheese production, which is some of which is exported, most doubled from 28,000 tons during the decade leading up to 1973. Isn't that beautiful? The Hungarian Dairy Institute has developed a new sort of cheese, the Tejet, or tea cheese. A loaf-shaped, full-fat cheese weighing 0.5 kilogram. with the ivory-coloured paste, an agreeable sourish flavour and spicy aroma. The Silsestart Ovari made from the same institute. The institute making government cheese, oh my god. The Balaton, named after the Hungarian lake southwest of Budapest, is a large rectangular heavily pressed cheese with rather a rancid but fascinating taste. Due to the butter acid bacteria, it ripens sometimes in foil without rind in 4 weeks to become a light yellow firm product which melts on the tongue. Oh dear. Now this is interesting, that rancid butter is used as an, or rancid bear fat was used as a insect repellent, actually got rid of insects. Largetta is also a new cheese, a bar shape, full fat, with semi-hard, smooth paste and white straw, yellow colour and orange rinds. The taste is fresh but slightly piquant. The Cao Avello type, this is the horseback cheese, Cascavel, which is like cheese horse, is sometimes traditional sheep milk cheeses as the brine cheese resembling Greek feta. The well-known Lipiter, like the Czechoslovakian counterpart, the Lipsoska, Brinza, is made from both sheep's and cow's milk. The best type of Lipiter based on the cheese is the Gambola, brought in by the shepherds to which the factories add paprika. Lipiter is packed in boxes, bottles or boxes. Gamola is called taco, or turo, is made from milk thickened over a fire, then allowed to curdle spontaneously, or with rennet, as it hangs in cloth in the sun. The cheese is a major ingredient at turo casa, eaten practically every day, a sort of macaroni covered with turo, sour cream, and spiced fried, and pieces of fried bacon. Well, Hungary doesn't leave you very much. It's got government experimentation happening on. Australia won't get very much. Racks of ripening cheeses. These are Hungarian versions of the, there you go. It's of a Port du Salut cheese. I must admit, I don't know what that cheese is. I've never eaten it. Now, we're quickly whipping our way through these Eastern Bloc countries. Romania. The river Danube's course to the Black Sea shapes, oh, that's close to the Black Sea, shapes the border of southern Romania, where the foothills of the Transylvanian Alps descend to the lowlands of Wallachia. To the northeast is Moldova, another fertile area meaning part of Romania is mostly mountainous. Agriculture is very important, although post-war industrialization has pushed it into second place. The government farms have as much pasture as arable land. Cattle breeding has increased considerably, and large herds of milking breeds roam the Great Plains. Romania has the fourth largest beef population in Europe after the Soviet Union, Spain, and Yugoslavia. One of Romania's oldest cheeses is made of sheep's milk, the Brinza del Burdulf, which weighs, I'm sure, my Romanian's not there, weighs an impressive 60 kilograms. The well-pressed, ripened ground curd is put in a specially made sheepskin or goatskin sack called a Burdulf, hence the name of the cheese. It's sewn together with raffia after being filled with curd, which then ripens as the temperature is gradually lowered. The final product resembles a firm, somewhat crumbly, but easy to spread quark. Gee whiz, I wish I remembered what quark was. But it's just cheese in a sack. The paste is light yellow in colour and strongly aromatic. The surface is grey-brown with small green and white mould spot. Brinza, unless you have mould mites going into it, Brinza, or foot-pressed cheese, Brinza in Corcia de Brad is packed in a container of fir bark and lends its special flavour of the cheese. It weighs from 0.5 to 10 kilograms. Romania also makes a plastic curd cheese rather similar to the Italian Cocovaglio. Giacovaglio. I'll have to have some of that cheese. It was the cheese I want. Port Salut and the Cocovaglio cheese. These cheeses are each called after the district of origin, as well as most well-known types being Cascaval d'Aubriga from the steppes, and Cascaval Pentelieu from the Pentel range in the Carpathians. Romania's most popular cheese, which used to be called after the town of Bralia in the Danube, is now the Telemei. Previously it was made of raw milk but by small cheese factories, but modern factories now use pasteurized sheep milk, cow's milk, and a mixture of cow's and buffalo's milk. First it ripens in containers of salted sour whey for a month, which is then much cooler atmosphere of the year. It is sold while still in its whey. The cheese is soft, rather sour, with a salty taste and often spiced with caramel. Do you think camel is cumin? Is that the Dutch word of cumin? I think it would be nasal cheese. Oh, well, you've got it here. Romanian nasal cheese. Nasal ripens in cool, moist rock cellars. The cheese is washed with brine and thin, pliant, greyish yellow rind is sprinkled with gypsum powder before the cheese is packed. God. Made from cow's and or sheep's milk, the paste is very lightly coloured and deliciously spiced with a soft consistency. My godfather. Guita sheep cheese, named after the mountain range, has only been made since 1960. It's a rectangular-shaped cheese with a cream-white paste and a brownish-yellow rind. A pure culture of butter and acid bacteria give it a strong aroma. Yurda is a sort of a crotter, unsalted and eaten fresh with dill. It's made from whey and remains after preparation of brinza and timula cheese. The state cheese industry also produces some foreign types, and the Romanian cheese consumption increases in pace with the rising exports. And here's a picture of a man. God. Okay, this is below. Protection against extreme cold, Carpathian winter, a shepherd is tending the flock, and the shepherd is wearing a sheepskin. It looks bizarre as you go. Bulgaria. Now, Bulgaria used to be a really important place, because that was the European entry between Constantinople and the Roman Church. It had big fights of Bulgaria or winning the Bulgarians over in the 8th century. Okay. In ancient times, the Bulgarians was peopled by the Thracians, then by the Romans, who maintained trade routes across to the Black Sea. Among the many commodities exchanged was cheese, and it remained an important product. The country has two cheese regions separated by the Balkan Mountains, the fertile plateau of the north, as well as the elevated plains of Marka in the south. In former times, both regions produced mainly sheep's milk cheese. Cascaval, probably introduced by the Romans, was the most important. Before the 16th century, it was prepared in the mountain huts and exported to Turkey, Egypt, and Palestine. It had to be a hard cheese with good keeping qualities. But there are now two types, the Balkani Cascaval from the highlands and the smaller Bulbokanski Cascaval or Demi-Balkan, I like a Demi-Balkan cheese, please, from the lowlands. In the 1930s, the mountain cheesemakers modernized their techniques considerably, but they still begin with raw sheep's milk. After curdling, the milk is turned to a sort of hoe and cut with the lyre, a lyre-shaped cutter. It's then thoroughly stirred, for the whey must have a chance to drain in order to produce a dry cheese. After the process in the cheese vat, the curd receives a cheddaring treatment and needed to form the round ball. So cheddaring is a system. I sort of read it, but sort of lost it. It's where you've got the curd and you just cut it. Okay. After processing the cheese vat, the curd receives a cheddaring system. It is then rubbed with dry salt and ripened in a damp place for 50 to 60 days. First 2 weeks, it's churned daily and cleaned with brine. It's churned at the final time just before paraffining and packing in transparent foil. What is transparent foil? That does not make sense to me. Preferably, the cheese should not become older than 10 months, as the gradual decomposition and look fact causes a burning taste. Oh, gosh, this is awful. It has a flat cylindrical shape with a nice smooth amber-coloured rind and yellow paste and very few holes. So this is just sourish and somewhat salty and aromatic piquant. The Demi Vulcan is 8 centimetres high and compared to 11.3 centimetres of the full Vulcan. The most important difference between the Demi Vulcan has a higher moisture content and a slightly lower fat content. Kasval Vitoshka is related to the previous types, but it's a much less pronounced taste and aroma. It's made of cow's milk and strikingly amber lover colour and a tough consistency. It's tough, looks strange, and doesn't taste or smell as much. A salt preference. A salty preference. By far the most popular and the most produced Bulgarian cheese type is the Bojo Salamero Serene. Commonly known as Serene cheese, it represents 75% of the total production. There are two types distinguished not by size, but by national character. The Bulgarians themselves prefer Serene made from pasteurized sheep's milk, a semi-hard cheese kept in brine in a wooden tin containers in which it ripens. Farmers as well as cheese factories produce it. The cheese has no rind, the paste is white, without holes, often rather crumbly, slightly sour and somewhat salty, with a characteristic sheep milk flavour. Most visitors to Bulgaria seem to prefer cow's milk Serene, which has a bland taste and more solid consistency. He said you're going to enjoy cheese. The Soviet Union. So all those people in Ukraine and stuff like that, which means borderlands, will just die when you listen to this. This is page 144 of Erkov's Stork's book. And you rush to the store if you can't get one. If your country doesn't have an Erkov Stork, I'm sure Holland has heaps of Erkov Storks, but you can either go to Amsterdam, probably easier, just go around asking people. The Dutch will probably know Erkov Stork. Or you can get in a Qantas flight and fly all the way down to Sydney. Give me a call and I'll let you have a look at my Erkov Stork. So this is the Soviet Union, and it's scary, can I say? Oh, here's a version of Javansky is the chunk cheese floating in a brine bath. It's really, it has a really sharp flavour. Dear. Oh, there's different, I'll leave you the different Soviet cheeses. The Cecil, the Darondinsky, the Desertny Sear, so S-Y-R means cheese. The Gornolaski cheese. The Jerevansky Sear. The Kavkazski Sear. The Lavasky Sear. The Soviet. The Sovietsky Sear. That'll be interesting. Rectangular. Weighs 16 kilograms. The Sear Rambliens and the Tilsit. Okay, they're pretty amazing cheeses. The Soviet Union, the Union of Socialist Republics, is a seemingly endless series of lowlands, much of it infertile tundra, surrounded by mountains ranges like the Caucasus, the Crimea, and the Carpathians. The south and southwest of Europe are part of it, especially fertile. The cheeses have been made there since prehistoric time, both in the lowlands and on the mountain slopes. Archaeological excavations in the Transcaucasia has unearthed primitive cheese molds. And near Durin, the ancient cheese dairy has been dug up, complete with basalt barrels for souring milk. About 700 BC, prehistoric Russia was conquered by the Scythians. Okay, now, the Scythians are these redhead people who actually all made their way up to Scotland. Scythia means Scotland. So these people, who are really already trading with the Greeks. So the Scythians. So this is really interesting. So there's an area above the Black Sea where they've got red hair, and also red hair in Scotland, the ginger Scots, because the Scythians, apparently, the genetics does not tell a lie. Scenes including the Scythians appear in Herodotus, the Greek historian, tells us about their love for horses, indicating that they made cheese and milk from their mares, dry it on spear points. And at the beginning of the 9th century AD, brought the Swedish Vikings from the north, also brought with them the Scandinavian specialty, cheese. Through the Soviet Union is now probably the biggest agricultural producer and the third largest cattle land in the world. Cattle breeding was for a long time subordinate to the growing of crops, and the preparation of cheese remained primitive. In recent years, however, the country's official food policy has switched intentionally and swiftly from emphasizing starchy foods to promoting rich foods with animal proteins, including cheese. How Gouda became Tilsit. The country's most famous cheese and the most imitated is the Tilster or Tilsit, which originated in East Prussia. It was created accidentally by a Dutch woman in the city of Tilsit in the 19th century. Like many Dutch cheesemakers, she made Gouda cheeses, but her cheeses turned soft and sharp and cracked. A new cheese was born. So it was a Dutch person who came into the Soviet Union to give the Soviets the great Tilsit. The new cheese was born. At a time, it was made from raw milk, usually low-fat content, spiced with caramel, which is cumin, I suppose, perhaps the most popular flavouring of the whole of Europe, other than caraway seeds. Under the orange rind flora caused by brine washing, they developed a piquant taste, whatever that means, which took some 5 months to mature. The modern cheese is considerably milder. Pasteurized milk is used in the mechanized preparation, and ripening time is usually shorter. It is a firm but smooth cheese, ranging from 30 to 50% fat. It's made from a loaf or a cartwheel, still possessing familiar cracks in the paste. A few round holes here and there, and full savory flavor and slightly sourish aftertaste. The Eastern Baltic Sea areas produce more good cheeses. The Latvian whole milk Latviski, so that's what Latviski, from Latviski, and to Syr, S-Y-R, for example, is treated with strong brine, and after 2 months with moist ripening is the correct flora on its sticky rind. Similar to cheeses are the Volga cheeses, the Volsky sire, the block form, which is much sharper than the Pinarski sire. Dessert sire is a brightly coloured paste, completely free of holes, lined with the only a trace of orange flora. During its 8 to 10 days ripening, it's sprayed with Penicillium candulum. Others washed cheese include lean, rather crumbly Salutski sire, with irregular holes, that's more solid than the Sea Rambinus, a bitter piquant type, from which, after ripening, the flora is scraped away. The cheeses are packed into drums, where they can be kept for about 3 months. The Soviet Union also makes Camembert-style cheeses with white rind flora. The Zakuzny Sea and the Dessertny Blay, but hard cheese types are much more general. They often resemble Emmental, and their names indicate the mountain regions of their origin. The Mokoski Viski Gisir, the Kubanski Sir, the Carpathian Sir, the Atlaski Sir, the Atlas Mountains, and the Soviet Sojetski, the Wanderers, Godlinski Edom type, and the Stepnogi, the Gouda type, enjoy traditional centuries-old popularity. Kneaded or plastic curd cheeses include the Kavkaski Sir and the Junzinyi E. That's J-U-Z. I've never seen this accent. They've got an accent on top of the Z and a little curved up. NYZ. Brine cheeses are the Sungal and Cecil. The last old Median cheeses make from cows or sheep milk are very low fat content at almost 10% acidified sour whey milk, sour milk or yogurt. After curdling, large flakes of rice from heating are kneaded by hand until the curd can be plaited into thick threads and then into spirals, balls or rolls. Mortel is a cheese similarly made in the factory, being special Coltsholt's collective farm cheese. It ripens for 3 or 4 months in a tube of sewn goat skin. A related type is the Armenian Daragzi, with a crumbly curd made from sheep's or goat's milk, or often both. It shares with the mortel the additional of salt and herbs, garlic and thyme, worked into the curd. The ripening takes place in leather bags or stone bottles covered with earth. Very well known semi-hard Armenian brine cheese is the Jevanski Sir. It ripens in tins during the first 2 months, are sealed with a rubber plug and a lid, which is removed to allow regular topping off the brine. Another semi-hard cheese, also from Armenia, the Telfanir, comparable to the Turkish Telpinir, Gornolatski Sir, is really hard cheese from the Atlas Mountains. Made from raw sheep's milk, its orange-red smear is regularly washed off. The rind is finely dried. Sometimes the cheese is smoked when it becomes almost as hard as the mountain homes, so it's excellent for grating and has a piquant, nutty, smoky flavour. Russians enjoy their fresh cheese, often mixing it with sugar, nuts and jelly and chocolate. Armenians are connoisseurs of cheese and are fond of their sharp Jevanski, a cheese that regularly provides farmers and shepherds with their midday snacks in the fields. So most people love being in the fields. And that, my friends, is the end of Europe hitting the Soviet things. So that's quite a big thing. Now, the Americas just shows this intensive dairy farming in a few, in real, really a bit in Argentina, a bit around Rio de Janeiro, somewhere in San Diego, or in Chile, but not near San Diego, down near the desert regions. Mexico has areas, and it's intensive dairy farming right throughout the United States. Now, the Americas, they have a picture here of this cow looking at me through the 1970s. And this above. Both American continents have a vast wealth of cattle and sheep. Both meat and dairy breeds have been vital to the economy. Cows and milk cheeses are popular in Canada and USA, where cheddar types are well established, while South American countries prefer the varieties of cheese known collectively as queso fresco. Now, I've got to really understand what, oh my godfather, Canada. You know, Canada is worth doing it, because hopefully we'll get, at the back, in Australia gets a small thing, in New Zealand, but there's living with cheese. Where did I read about Canadian World Fair? Oh yes, okay, this is worthwhile. The biggest cheese in the world, Canada, and Canada's doing a pretty amazing job. Now, Canada, ignore Canada's climate for a moment to consider the vast areas of fertile acres occupying the northern half of the American continent. There are great opportunities for agricultural cattle breeding, especially in those areas between the Rocky Mountains and the Pacific Ocean, and the spurs of the Appalachian Southeast. Now add the harsh, almost Arctic climate that affects practically the entire country during the winter months. In the east, where the warm Gulf Stream brings mild, wet climate, traditional conditions are more favourable than the west. Along the southern border, the cattle can remain outside the whole year round, but elsewhere, the country grazing season runs from May to the end of October and latest. From the early days of the French colonisation of the 16th century, the Old World cattle were imported, not always with great success. Today, However, Canadian milk herds are a result of successful breeding of Norman British cows shipped to France in 1692 by statesman Colbert. In 1783, the English arrived along with numerous other European immigrants who dispersed northwards. That's rather late for the English to arrive, because you've got the war of, American War of 1776, the American War of Independence, the French Revolution, all that type of, that's very late for the English to arrive. Especially they did so much damage. By 1851, we had almost 300,000 cows in Ontario, a similar number. Cheddar, under English influence, became the most important type of cheese. Ranso, it was originally made by the settlers' farmers in their own use for sale in the surrounding districts. Cheese factories only prepared in the second half of the last century. In 1864, the farmhouse cheesemaker Harvey Farrington founded the first cheese factory in Ontario. 3 years later, there were 200. The world's biggest cheese. It became increasingly clear the economic condition of the frequently impoverished dairy farmer couldn't be improved by stimulating demand for milk and with the sale of cheese. When plans for the Chicago welfare in 1893 were being made, Canadian authorities decided Ontario international fame as a cheese area by making a monster 10-ton cheddar using 103,000 litres of milk. The mighty cheddars were not exactly unknown. One was made for the wedding of Queen Victoria, but this was the largest of record size until Wisconsin cheesemaker produced one of 17 tons in 1964. So I'm just absorbing that. So these Wisconsin cheesemakers made the Americans. America owns the biggest cheese for the New York's World Fair. Well, there you go. You just make a huge cheese. Ontario's cheese is made in the government dairy produce testing station at Perth, and the curd was supplied by 15 different factories. The gigantic cheese mold was designed a method of reaching the required pressure of 200 tons was carefully calculated. The solution is found for turning such a huge cheese. After ripening through the winter, the cheddar, led by a local band, was ready to begin its expedition to Chicago. The first part of the journey saw the cheese conveyed on a reinforced wagon pulled by a train of horses, and then the journey was continued on a special train, applauded by a great crowd along the way. When it was unloaded to the exhibition, it fell straight through the floor. For 6 months during the summer, the awesome cheese stood in a glass-roofed hall, if anything but an ideal temperature, truly the object of wonder to the fair's visitors. It was eventually bought by an English tea importer, Thomas Lipton, of Lipton Cheese, and shipped to Liverpool, where it was found to have deteriorated. When the cheese factor, Arthur Rawson, inspected it later, he found, to everyone's surprise, that it had recovered completely. All but the top layer of 30 centimetres in the fresh English air. The London restaurateur took over the gigantic cheese and made yet another triumphal procession behind 8 horses and finally cut it into pieces with garden spades. Part of the cheese was sent back to Canada with the compliments of the restaurateur. 2 years old cheese still tasted delicious for all adventurers. Well, there you go. That is a big cheese, but to know that the big cheese was the 64 World Fair. Variety cheese. Canadian cheddar is made from non-pasteurized milk, which gives it a strong, full flavor addition to the pithy aroma of English farmhouse cheddar. Almost most of the export cheese is made from raw milk, but pasteurized milk is also widely used. The Canadian government promoted the high quality product and by giving premiums to good manufacturers and dairy farmers, and by subsidising the improvement of cheese factories. Even during World War II, In spite of the U-boat menace, Canada provided England with large quantities of cheddar. At present, however, exports is much lower. The active migration policy of the government has brought immigrants from many European countries, a population that has grown by from 5 to 20 million people since 1900, can easily consume all its own cheese. The immigrant farmers tried to make the same cheese that their original homeland, usually without complete success, because of the different soil conditions, climate and milk. Neither could they learn from each other's experience due to the isolation of each homeland. However, they did manage to make a good cheeses, which in some ways resembled the originals, while otherwise being made new Canadian cheese type. Their number has now risen to 49 under collective name of variety cheese. This is just too much for me to get in. So everyone's making different cheese and they've given it a name, variety cheese. That's what I like. One of these, the Ocker, is rather like Poltzlu, is made at the Tapis Monastery of the same name near Montreal. This cheese has a very mild aroma and softly piquant flavour. It's made, they say, from a secret recipe smuggled out of France. In Canada, the United States, the demand for cheese far exceeds the supply, but the monks refuse to increase production, and nobody has yet succeeded in making a passable imitation. The Italian Bel Pasta cheese is a different story. The Canadian called it Richelieu, an exclusive product of a very fresh sweet milk, a fat content of 3.8 to 4%, so it's low fat. 24 years of research and experiments were needed to find the ideal recipe. The body is brie-like, soft and melting creamy. The rind is washed and hard, very hard reddish. Most varieties of cheeses have poor keeping qualities. Consequently, factories must be located close to the large population centres where the milk is relatively expensive. Furthermore, supplies of winter milk are limited. Another factor adversely affecting production is that most immigrants prefer genuine cheeses from their homeland, which are imported at prices below that of Canadian descendants. The result is that many variety cheese makers have ceased production. Half the 60 remaining factories, however, have begun to profit from a sudden popularity of pizza, for which a lot of mozzarella is needed. Variety cheese consumption is increasing again, and the annual per capita average is dumping from 4.3 to 7.5 kilograms of cheese in the last 10 years. This includes cottage cheese, which is processed cheese that's also made in Canada. The United States of America. Donald Trump. Oh my god, they've got how many pages? Oh my god, the United States has got as many as not Switzerland, probably Denmark. So, the discoverers of the United States. The discoverers of the New World found no familiar livestock, neither sheep nor cows nor goats, to supply their milk, meat, and cheese. Later settlers were obliged to import their own animals. They did, however, find tobacco, potatoes, tomatoes, maize, turkeys, and so were some compensations. The imported cattle became vital importance as draft animals and providers of necessary commodities. From 1611, the English established a cattle at Jamestown. The Dutch in New Netherlands bought their own cattle, probably Frisians, while the Scandinavians brought their large yellow-coloured animals to the American settlements. These various breeds were crossed a matter of necessity, and after a while, little could be traced from the original characteristics. Careful breeding was impossible during the early pioneering days, when men and beasts had to fight for survival under the most primitive conditions. Many animals failed to live through the harsh winters when not enough food was available for the cattle and were generally in poor condition. In spite of these difficulties, the settlers made a variety of cheeses, mainly cheddars, according to methods of their home country. In 1650, the New England could meet its own requirements in butter and cheese and trade with the surplus. But it was not until long after the War of Independence that radical improvements in agriculture, stock breeding, and dairy were made. Improvements were essential. From the 19th centuries, cities expanded at such a rate that the demand for meat and dairy products rose steeply. Pioneer cheesemakers. Although the cheese made by methods long established in Europe and colonist equipment was fairly primitive, the limited milk yield was an additional problem. Milk had to be kept for a few days until there was enough to make one cheese. The farmer's wife warmed the milk above the fire and spent it with a strip of calf's stomach, which, being impregnated with rennet, curdled the milk. The whey was drained off, and the curd cut and divided with a knife before being pressed under some stone weights. When gas began to form the base due to the action of bacteria, the cheese became inflated and had to be pricked to allow the gas to escape. If inflation continued, the cheese was thrown away or given to the pigs. Cheese, which did not rise during the first after the first month, could be kept for a year or more and be transported well. So basically, you have this off milk and you don't know if it's going off. Cowboys and cooperatives. In the 19th century, two entirely different types of establishment developed the American cattle farming. Around the large population centres lived farmers who endeavoured to produce large milk yields, who carefully selected and fed and tended their cows, sometimes keeping them in stables throughout the year. But in the endless prairies where the ranchers, with their enormous herds bred for meat production, semi-wild lockhorn cows driven by cowboys over great distances to slaughterhouses or railway stations, the rough prairie grass was good enough for this kind of cattle. But there was barely looked after and were no importance for dairy production. With the new increasing value of character of herds, breeders formed cooperatives scientifically concentrating on improving the stock. The same development occurred in Mary dairy cattle farming, stimulated by the activities of the dairy industry. Danish, Guernsey, Ayrshire, New Hampshire, Fishkin and brown Swiss cows were ordered from Europe. There were no longer cow bread except if provided beneficial milk yield. Goat's cheese was made in Colorado and California, for which Swiss Sangel and Totenberg goats were imported. So, you know, S-A-N-E-N means a cheese expert, I think. Founding the factories. Initially, farmhouse cheesemaking had a fundamental but hit or miss approach. All this was to change with the establishment of the first cheese factory in the 19th century. The first was in New York State, where enterprising, professional, knowledgeable farmers processed the milk and from many farms. The enterprise farmer's name, Jesse Williams of Rome, New York, who had a reputation for making high quality cheese, began the trend when he decided to process the milk from the farm of one of his sons, in addition to that of his own farm. Gradually, more and more farmers supplied him with their milk, which Julian's made into cheeses of usual high standard. His business expanded, and the American way of dairying spread along the East Coast and elsewhere. By 1882, when most European countries were installing their first cheese factories, America already had 3,000 cheese factories. Another 19th century development, which was to encourage the changeover from traditional farming methods to the large-scale factory production, was the revolutionary improvement in transportation facilities. Better roads, new waterways, and the first railways linked the countryside with the large population centres. Milk products among the goods that could now travel longer distances to reach the growing towns were due to the influx of immigrants and their great demand. So you can see how cheese is a way of getting nutrient from the landscape. If you didn't have to kill everything, you could just send the cheese in. Farms which made cheese for local consumption were thus supplemented by cheese factories producing large quantities for the growing markets. New York remains the biggest dairy producing state until well into the 20th century, but the 1860 Wisconsin, with its ideal climate for keeping cattle and growing fodder, was proving a strong competition. In 1845, Swiss colonists founded the Wisconsin village of New Gallus. Various types of cheese were made in a traditional way from milk of brown cows, of their brown cows, but exclusively for their own consumption. Later, they became They became a prejudice against large-scale factory cheeses, which were by then better and more stable quality. The Italians, too, made their traditional cheeses. The French provided producers of cheeses, and the Scandinavian Dutch followed suit, making versions of their national cheese types. Indeed, so much cheese was produced in Wisconsin that the market could not cope. Worse, cheese factories in the largest cities do not have sufficient storage space to keep the increasing stock. Cheese prices tumbled, but establishing the Dairy Board of Trade in 1873, steps were taken to ensure the distribution would be properly channeled. One American. In the early 1890s, some American cheesemakers had tried to increase their profits by skimming the milk before making cheese, reconstituting the fat content by adding cheaper fat. The quality deterioration did not escape the attention of the foreign buyers, and exports collapsed. In 1895, an act was passed to forbid the making of cheese with alien fat. Filled cheese, as was known. The determination was easily recognized as the shape of the skim milk cheese, but the damage had been done. Canada had already taken over the export markets opened by the United States, as remained the larger cheese exporter. American cheese production gradually recovered, helped by the first American Dairy School and University of Wisconsin. And the University of Wisconsin is Wolfram. So you see how it's a big dairy industry. Received scientific training and with extensive network of contacts in the home and abroad was up. So my Wolfram comes from the Wisconsin Alumni Foundation. Despite setbacks, the American dairy industry developed into an important branch of the economy. The number of cheese factories is declining, but those remaining process larger quantities of milk, and with the aid of refrigerated transport, the supply can be gathered from far afield. Additionally, production can be adjusted to the fluctuations of public taste and demand, the so-called flexible plants, which produce a variety of cheese types. Although the numbers of dairy cattle have been declining for many years, total milk production is steadily increasing. This is because the milk yield per animal is still rising, as it should in view of the fact that the average yield per cow in the United States is still well below the milk yield of many countries. The discussion might seem odd in a country famous for having introduced the milkshake and for having championed ice cream. Less surprising is the fact the American has pioneered several new cheese types, the most original being the Space Age variety with the appropriate name New World. A vein cheese where the marbling is white instead of the usual greenish blue. The effect is achieved by subjecting the cheese to ultraviolet radiation during processing and producing white cheese with blue cheese taste. In spite of a promising start, it's found that the anemic New World is both expensive to make and therefore difficult to market. Cheesemakers are undoubtedly still on the threshold of discoveries, and when the new cheese appears, it will probably be developed in America. Oh dear. All cheeses designated by the collective name American cheese, I like variety cheese, American cheese belong to the cheddar family. Helmke country in New York was the cradle, but today Wisconsin is the cheddar state. Descendants of the old British aristocrats with a severe cylinder shape have diversified to many other types of styles. As the saying goes, large wheels, small wheels, tall cylinders, flat disc bars, barrels, bricks, cubes, sausages, pineapple shapes. These are unpackaged cheese or cheese packed in transparent plastics, in cartons, or glazed with earthenware pots. One can choose from cheese without rind, with rind, from the colours ranging from white to ivory to yellow to orange. There are hard and soft American cheeses, mild and sharp, neutral and spice, not to mention flavoured with cumin, pimento, and sage or port. The principle of the old English recipe is still followed, characterised by cheddaring process, which makes the warm curd particles stick together. So what is the cheddaring process? I really have to re-remember what that is. This takes place in either modern cheddar tower or a cheese making vat during the preparation of the curd, which is raked in the side of the vat and packed together to form fibrous mass at the centre. Subsequently, the curd is milled and slated and pressed. I do remember something about the tutoring process. I'll have to get that. Long hold or short hold? There is long hold, also called export cheddar, a cheese with low moisture content, which becomes nicely sharp after 1 year's maturation. However, this close body is very good for packaging portions. In addition, there is domestic or home trade cheddar with slightly more moist and softer body, which is already for consumption after 6 months. The traditional cylinder-shaped cheddar weighs 30 to 40 kilograms. The mammoth weighs 50 kilograms. The largest version, apart from the uncontested champion, the barrel, which comes in a round metal vat, rectangular carton. The barrel can weigh up to 300 kilograms, but it is sold in pieces to avoid having to carry it home. Smaller cheeses, all with cylindrical shapes, are the Daisy, the Longhorn, the Fat or Twins cheese, the Young American, which is 5 kilograms, sometimes packed in quarts, the Picnic, which is 5 kilograms, the block-shaped Rhinus cheddar. There are also a number of loaf cheeses. They'll give me a barrel cheese any day. The method of preparation is, of course, more important than the shape. The pronounced taste of the washed curd cheese is due to the procedure discovered in New York. By thoroughly washing the curd with cold water, the moisture content of the cheese increases. It therefore matures more quickly. It develops the character of a mature cheddar, but does not have the long-keeping quality. So that's why you have salt to draw out moisture from the cheese. My Godfather, look at the Americans. One might expect. The other variety that is being made is the long hold and short hold types. Colby cheese is first made in 1882 in the Colby Township, Wisconsin. It's washed in exactly the same way as washed curd cheese, but it's not cheddar. Because of its higher moisture content, it's already after 3 or 4 weeks. It isn't a cheese for keeping. It's granular, soft, and somewhat porous consistency with a creamy, deep yellow colour. Very popular because of its mildness, and because it's often used in snacks and salad. A closely related cheese is the stirred curd or granular cheese, just halfway. So we have to understand that they do something to the curd to just speed it up, make it cheddar. The California, Monterey, or Jack is similar to Colby, but creamy, white, and softer. With more holes or eyes, the cheese is copied from the old Monk's recipe and marketed by David Jacks since 1916. Today, the designation Jack only refers to Monterey with an extra high moisture content, also known as high moisture Jack. An excellent basis for Mexican dishes. In addition, there are very dry and easily grated variety called the grating type Monterey. Endless variety. The list of cheddar derivations is virtually endless, but there are a few more. The smoked cheese is smoked over a smouldering wood, or flavoured artificially with smoked salts or liquids. That's how you probably do. Spiced cheese is cheddar with herbs and spice added. Pineapple is a pineapple-shaped cheddar from Litchfield County, Connecticut, which matures in nets for several months, and rubbed with oil, shellacked and waxed exterior. The Herkimer New York cheddar variety, which today is made only in limited quantities, unlike most related cheeses, it is pure white with a sharp taste. Unusual cheddars are thus plentiful in America. The original type was probably remained the most popular. The ordinary orange slice grilled between two slices of bread or melted on a hamburger, but American cheddar is most affectionately welded to the homely companion to apple pie. The average American eats 8.5 kilograms of cheese per year, of which 3.6 is cheddar. The central place of American cheese is a culinary practice, as indicated by these facts. The next famous is the cottage cheese, of which the American also consumes only less than 2.4 kilograms. There are several highly popular types of cottage cheese in the United States. The acid curd cottage cheese, which is made without rennet, has a fresh butter acid aroma and a smooth texture. The eastern states used to be very renowned for the New York or country style, but it's now largely displaced by the sweet curd cottage cheese. This is prepared with rennet and has a very mild taste, smell and taste. It's marketed under the names of California, Frisco, Popcorn, Flake Cheese. Creamed cottage cheese carefully excludes undesirable bacteria is mixed with 4% salted cream before being packed. It's often enriched with vegetables or fruit. Whipped cream cottage cheese, with a fat content of 8% due to the addition of whipped cream, is tenable for only a short time because of the bacteria present in the air. If stored for too long, the whey sometimes separates off. The matured type, Pennsylvania Dutch, and white malt spores are added on purpose. The factor that makes the cheese a fresh fresh granite cheese so popular, apart from the many uses in the kitchen, is undoubtedly the high protein content and the low calorie count. They have established a place in most slimming diets. Cottage cheese keeps well in the refrigerator and can also be frozen. Thawing should be done slowly and carefully. The cheese, which bears a close resemblance to cottage cheese, is Baker's cheese, a low-fat variety with finer granules, more moisture and sour taste. It's generally used with cheese pastry. Okay, here we've got here. I think I'm just going to read this. We've got a multiple section that just looks like real space age stuff. I'll read C for you. This is a diagram of A to E where the cheese is eventually poured into vats and bolts. Well, A is interesting. The first stage, cream cheese production, is pasteurization and the low-fat, germ-free milk. The milk must also be free of any smell or stable of fodder. The pasteurized is passed through thin pipes of between thin plates which are encased in a water jacket. Every particle of milk must be heated to 70 degrees Celsius for at least 15 seconds. Among the remaining varieties of cheese consumed in America, accounting for almost 30% of the total consumption, the mild, fresh, rich cream cheeses is one of the most popular. When, after 1880, cream cheese factories spread out from New York all over the country, the production underwent a revolutionary change due to the invention of a separator. This device made it possible to separate the whey immediately from the hot cream cheese mix, a mixture of milk, cream and milk, and to back the curd hot. The maximum storage time for the end product was doubled by this hot pack method to 60 days. There's nevertheless some factories which retain the earlier cold pack method because the aroma of the cheese is full and consistency is thus cohesive. While other spices and flavourings are added to the cream cheese, Neufchâtel cheese is made, according to the French example, resembles cream cheese but contains more moisture and less fat. This causes the taste more sour, although there's no difference in acidity. Unlike French, Americans usually employ the hot pack method with cream cheese too. Another difference is that Americans like it fresh, while the French prefer it ripened with a white surface mold like hamburger. Cold pack cheese or potted cheese is a fine smooth mixture of one or more cheese types ground together. The component principally well-aged high-quality cheddar is stated on the plastic and earthenware pot. It may be prepared with vinegar and some other acids, salts, spices, herbs and other flavourings such as white port. It's an hour and I've got how many pages? I've got this is one page of let's finish off the United States. Cheeses with character. The growing demand for soft cheeses, which is imagine the Americans, I know, I'll remove cow fat and replace it with pig fat. What does this cheese taste? Disgusting. Given it's all chucked out. America has just got on to be this behemoth. The growing demand for soft cheeses has undergone a surface ripening. Is striking. The statement that American cheese's preferences are determined more by size of packaging than taste is denied by popularity of the Camembert, Brie, Belle Paris, Munster, Port-Salut, Limburg, Brick and Liederkranz. The latter two are considered American originals. Brick was made in Wisconsin in early 1895, I think. Brick cheese, I'd give that to American. It has a reddish brown, somewhat dried out crust and ivory coloured paste, which is softer and easier to cut than cheddar, but firmer than Limburger. Brick has a mellow, stimulating aroma and rather sweet taste, which is easy to distinguish from both cheddar and Limburger. Less sharp than the first, less strong than the second. It has numerous irregularity spread holes. After a few months of curing, if the flavour is sufficiently well developed, the cheese is cut into pieces of varying sizes and packed in slices. The robust Lindekrantz, the trade name for very wild Limburg cheese, with its golden yellow creamy almost melting paste, is developed in 1892 after years of experiment. It was the imitation of the Bismarck Schlosskäse, which could not be imported in any real quantity, and many connoisseurs praise it as more highly than the original. Finally, there are many versions of the foreign cheeses, including the Blue Van Tights, Blue Gorgonzola, Stilton, Italian cheeses, Parmesan, Roman, Provolone, Mozzarella, Pizza cheese, Dutch cheeses, Edam, Gouda, Swiss specialty, Emmeltzer, Gruyère, and various way cheeses, Gjerost, which is from Norway, Sap, Asko, and Ricotta. And they're whey cheeses. Isn't that amazing? No country is a better market for processed cheese than the United States, but this kind of cheese, as opposed to natural cheeses, will be dealt with in a separate section. American cheeses are rarely sold as bulk cheeses, but are usually packaged by the producer and sold in small stacks, boxes, cartons, tins, etc. This can derive to considerable confusion when the package is not provided with a label bearing all the relevant information about the nature and type, natural or pasteurized, process, composition, low moisture, part skin, sharp, smoke. Okay, sometimes, as with the Lisburg, it's indicated that the date of the cheese is expected to reach full maturation. Strict controls are exercised on the quality of cheeses themselves, and all products are derived from them by the individual states as well as the Food and Drug Administration and the Federal Standard of Identity. The United States exports little cheese. Imports are expected to increase in the future. The consumption of cheese per capita is growing steadily. Research has shown that the cheese consumption per capita is the highest on the western coast. The Italian cheeses are becoming more and more popular, and foreign-born Americans have the highest purchase ratio of natural cheeses to processed types. It follows that a country as vast in area, diverse in taste, and as progressive as America is offering a selection and convenience, would have a wide variety of appetizing cheese. Compared with Europe, the American cheese industry is in its infancy. Americans of the future can expect to develop taste for their own natural cheeses, a very increasing of imported types. That's diplomacy. All that thing. So we're coming up to Central America, which we'll do next. Central America doesn't go very... Yep, there's a short thing on Central America with Chilean cheese. There you go.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.